Blog Talk Radio. All too often these days, the factory whistle is falling silent in America. But there is a way to get American workers back to work. Start buying more American-made products. Now, a Michigan-based company is leading the way in this movement to strengthen our economy. It's called AmericanMadeProducts.com. AmericanMadeProducts.com is more than a way to purchase American-made products online quickly and securely. It's a way to get our economy moving in the right direction. Go online or call and speak to a live customer service representative. AmericanMadeProducts.com, a family company based on the belief in the American worker and the quality of American-made products. If you're an American manufacturer, big or small, and would like your products on our site, contact us. We add products daily. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your employer about AmericanMadeProducts.com. Visit, shop, and watch America grow. AmericanMadeProducts.com.
Remember that at Fisher Body at midnight. That sound would go off because we live by there. Talking. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, you didn't interrupt nobody.
Well,
I gotta leave here, so I had stepped out.
Okay. Just a kitten.
I was just, yeah. Anyway. How are we all doing? I know you're feeling the wonder of the weather today.
Yeah. I'm cinnamon and kind of sick, and but we'll meddle through the T-bone carried to Tobias, my friend, and said I should proof for you and all this other crap or getting glasses. I don't know what he was saying. We do have emails, but mostly they're pretty good. They're really pretty good. And this is from Pauline from Arlington, Texas. She wrote the other night, I think, the last Sunday. I wrote the other night. We listened last night, and to a man and woman, the show was much better. We got more information last night than in 5 weeks. We took a vote, and everyone wants Leroy on the show every week. Please. Mary and Helen, we would like to hear more from you too. And Mary, we hope you won your election. A team leader came up to us and wanted to know if this was the same show. And people in the break room, the big break room was full of people listening. Donnie and Scott, you have to get Leroy. And he lets people talk. Yeah, he does. I have to give him that. He's very polite and lets people talk. I like to show Donnie and Scott and Hot Texas. Good job, guys. That's one. Good Lord, I peel these apart. All right. I hope you can hear me, Scott. You haven't mentioned or said a word.
I'm here. I'm a listening.
Okay. Well, this is from Dan Johnson from Lordstown. What a show last night. Questions for Donnie and Scott. Did you know about the pensions? If you If so, why didn't you bring it out weeks ago before the elections? If the other guy, if not, the other guy should have known. But I want to thank you, Leroy. You added so much to the show. And, of course, that's from Dan, John, from Lordstown. And, yeah, I didn't know anything about it. Scott never mentioned anything to me. Whatever we get, and we can confirm, we tell it. I didn't know that the pension thing blew a lot of people away. A lot of people. I don't know if Scott knew about it. I can't answer for him. And Scott,
I think if I would have known something that important, we would have been all over that. The problem with it is you've only got so many people who are, in my opinion, appear to be labor friendly at this point. That means that all you have to do is look at, and this isn't an opinion, the full frontal assault that's been delivered to the membership from our own organization. And what I'm going to say is I'm not trying to make an excuse. I do apologize. I've really been trying to follow around this healthcare thing. And what you have is you have 1,680 pages in this tentative agreement. And there's a lot to read. And when you get to certain pages, such as like the supplemental language, which is, I believe, it's appendix, I can tell you here, just a second, I have it up.
Well, they can appendix, look
at Exhibit A, it's Exhibit A and B. And I think that's what Leroy was referring to last night. There's so much language here, and there's so many pieces that have to fit together in this puzzle that it takes time to read this stuff. And the contract that went from the tentative agreement that went from Chrysler to General Motors was different. It was different in different places. So it changed the whole dynamic of that language.
Right.
Like I said, you know, if any of you take a look at the full tentative agreement, you'll understand there's a lot there. It's confusing at times. There's also references. You have to go to this one to go see this thing, to go back to see this paragraph, to go back to see this appendix, and then you have to go read that language to come back and see, okay, what did I just read? It's very time-consuming. And we apologize we didn't get this out in a more timely manner. Apologize that other people wanted to argue about other things, and that won't happen anymore. We do apologize. We know your guys' time is very valuable, and tonight hopefully we're going to address some more things, do a recap after the you finish the reading, but I want to address that with him. Lordstown, shout out to Lordstown. Shout back out to Arlington and Pauline and the gang down there to Arlington. Kudos, you guys didn't let it pass. I know we're going to be waiting sometime here. I imagine the next couple, probably before the show's over, we'll know what happened at Wentzville. We're trying to help as many people as we can. There's a lot of people buying these scenes right now that are putting in a lot of hours, and a lot of hours communicating with each other, trying to figure out what do we see, what did it say, what does it mean, how does it implicate us in this whole thing, how is it going to affect us. So, all right, well, I'll let you keep going, Dan.
Okay, let me get 517 on. 517, you're on.
Hi, brothers. This is Leroy McKnight. Thank you, Donnie and Scott, for having me on the show tonight. Again, I've just been listening a little bit. I want to thank everybody that listened to the show last night. I want to thank Pauline and her crew down there in the break room. We'll give a shout-out to the break room there. Hey, give us a yeehaw down there from Texas, huh? And, of course, Lordstown, I'm from there. I grew up in Youngstown. So Tonawanda's listening, I know that. We even have some folks from Canada listening tonight. We got a lot of folks dependent upon us. Now, as Scott said, there's over 1,600 pages that we've been vetting, and there's just a few of us. But once we find something as important as this pension information, not only do we have to just, you know, share it with you, and it's incumbent upon us to share it with you as soon as we possibly can, but there's a lot of references to the statutes, you know, USC, Title 29 USC et al., and we have to go and research those as well. We have to go and talk to other pension authorities so that we're on firm ground. We have an obligation to give you correct information. This information came out to us, I believe Wednesday was the first day that we had it available to us, not weeks ago, just on Wednesday. So with you, we don't have anything special here. And we've been reading and reading and reading. And I tell you, my eyes are starting to go crossed over here, I tell you. And this information about the pensions, to be clear, it came out late Sunday afternoon. And because I have a case that went to the Supreme Court, I pretty much have the pension plan memorized. And this had to do with the pension issue. So when I saw all this new language in there, I'm going, holy cow. And some old language that said it relieved the corporation from their obligation to put any further monies in the plan after 2008. I had to go and read the U.S. Title 29 USC appropriate codes, digest those, talk to other pension authorities that actually know this. And I have, you know, like, you know, a sidewalk call in the plant. I have some sidewalk calls that I have with some attorney friends that don't give me official opinions, but tell me whether I'm on firm ground or not. So we check all that before we come on and give you information, brother. And I just want to let you know that what I said last night is based on what everybody else has told me is accurate information. And I know a lot of people got scared by what I reported last night, but I'm going to tell you, I'm just the messenger. I just read out contract language that exists and told you what that means to you. So I don't want to scare people. I want to educate people. So that's sort of where we're at with that, and I hope you all appreciate that. So. You know, we're trying to do our best to give you accurate information, not something that's half-stepping. So this has been tested, and I've been on the phone yet again today to hire pension authorities, and we'll be again tomorrow. And we're on firm ground if we choose to appeal this election because people voted on this pension plan that were not plan participants. Okay, we are on firm ground in that regard, according to some higher pension authorities who gasped today when I told the three of them that I talked today about it. So, like I said last night, we're on firm ground, and that's been, again, verified again today. So, Scott or Donnie, if you want to take one of the issues and start off, I'll follow in as time goes by, but for now, I just want everybody to know that's sort of what's been going on with this pension. We just knew about it late Sunday afternoon, and I had to do some verification, and we got it out as soon as we possibly could, brother.
There you go.
Are you done with all the emails then for right now then, or have you read them all?
No, I've got four more. I believe they're love letters.
Go ahead and.
Much love letters to Leroy. Leroy, could you go over and we'll do this after we read the emails and we'll get the emails out of the way. Leroy, could you go over what you said about the pensions, please? And
sure,
why
we'll do Sorry.
And why didn't we hear this before? UAW always hide the bad things from us. They just push the bonus. Thanks, Leroy. Baltimore, Maryland, from Chad. And he will get to that. He will get to that. I guarantee it. He'll get to that. And the next one is from Mel in Tennessee. I think retirees are going to be on Obamacare before long. And so will be the working people now. I do not trust anyone in IUAW and more. What's your thoughts? That's from Mel. I'll hold that out in case we want to check the, you know, answer to that. I'm from Volkswagen, Tennessee.
Okay. Can you hear me? Hello?
Don, are you there?
Hello?
We can't hear you, Don.
Yeah, we can't hear him. Well, I can hear you. You can hear me. Let me double check. I think I got a filter going on out here. Let me see if it's still on. If we're
can anybody hear me now?
Now we can hear you, Don.
But
yeah,
I got my okay. They can hear me now. Okay,
okay.
That was from. All right. I'm from Chattanooga, you know, Tennessee, Volkswagen. I also read the contract, and I'm so glad I voted no when they tried to force their way into our plan. Wonder how many people at the UAW, the UAW people read it. Local 43 is a joke. One day I will go more into that. The show was great last night. Thanks, Joe, a hard-working line worker. Joe, if you work on a line, I know you're a hard worker. There's no question about it. And we're proud of you. Thank you for writing. This is Terry from Bowling Green. We all need to know what you said about health care, Scott. Every time you try to talk about it, a couple of guys talked over you. Thanks again, and a great job last night. Best show since I've been listening. That was from Terry from Bowling Green. He's got a lot of letters like that. Leroy, could you go over what you said about the pensions, please? I think I read this. And why didn't... Well, I think I read this. Are you a... Oh, maybe I didn't. Did I read one from Baltimore? I'll read
yeah.
it again. Leroy, could
from
you
Chad?
Go over what... Yeah. Yeah, okay,
yeah.
I read it. And I read it.
Yeah.
I usually put these to the side so I don't reread them. There you go. And there's more. There really are love letters to Leroy and Scott for doing, excuse me, that was the way the show was supposed to be set up in the first place, and I'm going to tell people that. You don't talk over people, and you answer questions, and I don't know what that noise is. I think that is something anyway, but it's really a lot of love letters about thank you for that. We didn't know that. Why didn't we know that before? And all of this other stuff. And thanking Scott and Leroy. It's Scott's show. This is Scott's show. And the show finally sounded. I was proud of the show last night. I was pissed off on Sunday. But I'll tell you, very, very pleased with last night's show. I was proud of it. Thank you both. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. I've been doing this 9 years. And that was the best show we had. So, Scott, Leroy, take it away.
Thank you, Don. Scott, you want to start off with some healthcare stuff? I'll come back and I'll definitely go over what Chad and some other folks want me to do. We cover that pension stuff we talked about last night. But if Scott wants to start off with healthcare, I'll be happy to sit by and listen to him repeat and cover that as well again. So,
I guess we would like to thank everybody for expressing their concern and that you listened and that you want to maybe you want to have a better understanding of what we kind of talked about last night and that you've communicated that you would like to have that repeated, and I feel with you. I want to hear it a second time myself. If this is going to affect me personally, my family, this is important information. And for the people who are out there who haven't voted yet and are listening to this show, we're trying to get this information so you can make the best informed decision that's going to impact your life the most right now. This contract is really really got some barbs in it. But anyway, what I have been looking at is the Exhibit C, the supplemental agreement on health care. And if you go to that appendix or that exhibit, it will, at the very beginning, it lays out the groundwork of kind of what it is. And then as you read through all of these pages, there's a ton here in this part of the book alone. There's 360 pages. And what caught my eye on this whole thing was that was under Article 2, where it removes Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. Under Article 2, it removes them. It looks like they've been relieved of their duty, so to say. I have to apologize. I'm going on a little bit of sleep right now, so you have to bear with me on this. Article 1, and Article 2, which is page 24 on the actual tentative agreement. It's page 36 on the electronic or the PDF page. Page 37 clearly goes out. Article 2, Section 2B, core coverage. Other than mental health and substance abuse, for enrollees shall be provided under a national system by agreement between the company and the medical plan carrier, hereinafter referred to as the control plan, or by the agreement with other carriers where applicable. So what happened right before the words the medical plan carrier, and I'm looking right here at it, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan has been removed. And if you go farther into this language, it shows where the parties will mutually agree upon at a later time who that new carrier is going to be. In my opinion, and then I'll ask Leroy about this, but in my opinion, this leaves our health care plan wide open, correct?
Hello? Yes, yes. I mute my phone so I don't make too much noise around here. And I was listening, obviously. And yes, this paragraph B of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Michigan has been crossed off, and it is no longer in the agreement. So this is now going to be called the medical plan carrier. Now, we've heard a lot about a co-op. This is not the design of a co-op, but it sure leaves open the idea that they can insert any medical plan carrier that they want to within this framework, and this language is very open-ended. They can do just about anything they want. They can put Acme Healthcare in there if they want to. And as we talked about last night a little bit, Blue Cross Blue Shield is universally accepted pretty much nationwide. It's been around for, you know, since the 1920s, I'm told, and they merged in the early 40s, I believe, late 30s, early 40s. Not exactly sure on that date. There's some folks believe that's 1941. But they've been around a long time, and they're notable. So Blue Cross Blue Shield has been taken out. Now, a brother came on from Wentzville. And I apologize, I can't remember his name. There's a lot going on. But he's a nice young man. He came on and explained how when FCA took Blue Cross Blue Shield out as a carrier plan, medical plan carrier, and inserted something else, that a lot of doctors would not acknowledge that new health care. And they had a lot of problems with it, and they had to go beg doctors to accept it. And then they finally decided that wasn't a good idea, and I understand that they've gone back, according to him, to Blue Cross Blue Shield. When you start messing around with something that works, it's over or real close to 100 years old, and accepted universally. I mean, Medicare is not even accepted universally. Then you start having problems for the membership, and that has not been taken into account in my mind's eye, in my opinion. Pretty much everything I say here is in my opinion, because as much as we like to say we're just other people, just like you, but educated nonetheless on the issues, and we're self-educated. Some of us have a long history of unionism as a status elected official, but I don't come to you in that status anymore. I come to you as an educated, and so does Donnie and Scott, as educated people who've taken the time to make sure that we can speak to these issues with some real substance to them, and bring out these issues that have been hidden, purposely hidden, in my opinion, from you, that are really, really bad things that can happen. But this is often called an unintended consequence when, they have well-meaning ideas about a new health co-op. Whether that's going to be successful remains to be seen, but you're going to have to deal with, likely going to have to deal with a medical plan that is not as well recognized or accepted as Blue Cross Blue Shield, now some 90 years old, I guess I would say. So, Scott, you're correct that this is problematic when they remove this company there. And there's, we've had trouble with Blue Cross Blue Shield on certain issues, but we've always been able to try and resolve those. I know we had a lot of issues in the VEBA because the VEBA changed the hold harmless clause, where if you dealt, I don't want to get into that. It's a whole other subject. That hold harmless meant that in-network doctors were good, and out-of-network doctors could do what's called balance bill you. In other words, whatever Blue Cross Blue Shield didn't pay, then you have to pay. So if they billed $1,000 and our coverage paid $600, you'd be liable for $4. We were successful in some measure because we got that handled as best we could for the membership, even though I never was the representative for the plan. But for the class action, class representative, I was not, but we did get some changes, so, and that's one of them. So we have some benefits with regard to that. So I got a lot of deep history here, brothers and sisters, and I speak with some educated information and some experiential information. So I hope you understand that. We're not giving you a whole lot of rhetoric here. This is really happening, and this has been taken out. We're looking at it right here, digital page 37 of the healthcare plan. So if anybody's looking for it, the top of it, paragraph B, digital page 37. So, Scott, if you want to continue, I'll step aside here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that clarification. I guess if we can't stress the importance of just this one piece. Leroy hasn't, come back and, readdress the pension language. This is such an important issue for people. And, I like your idea, Leroy, and I keep coming back to that letter, and it just pulls at me, that poor fellow with the two kids. And he's telling you, he's pleading with you, if you didn't hear him, how important it is that he maintains his health care that he has right now. Now is not the time to change this and to go into such uncertainty into the future. He doesn't need uncertainty. He needs stability right now. He needs to know that he's got health care for his family. He's got two children that are sick right now. And, God bless the poor guy that he's having to deal with this. I can only imagine how stressful it must be. And then to have information like this hit you upside the head, to me, in my opinion, it's despicable on behalf of the organization. When you continue reading through this, it defines what's going to happen, who's going to do this. In the language under C, it says, in the middle of C, it says, all carriers agreeing to provide such coverage under the program shall do in accordance with the interpretation and benefit practices established by the control plan. So when you go to the control plan, you say, what is that control plan? You go back up to Part B of Article 2, 2B, and it tells you that this medical plan carrier here and after will be referred to as the control plan. So, I guess it's legalese, but they're telling me that any of these carriers, whoever this carrier is, because it's not being named out, it just says the medical plan carrier. Whoever that is, they say that they agree to whatever, basically what the parties agree upon on the interpretations under this new control plan. And I think if we kept reading through, there was another a reference to it as the informed choice. There's a lot of names for this thing, and it's confusing. And you try to read through this. Like I said, this document is 360 pages long. And I know that I talked to some people who sit down and try to read this, and 15 minutes into it, they've only made a dent in it, and they get discouraged. So we're just trying to tell you, brothers and sisters, that is a bad thing, and it's in your contract. And if you've already voted and you voted yes, you need to go back and look at this language and understand what you voted on. For those who are still going into the polls, whether it be tonight, tomorrow, Friday, or Friday into Saturday, we implore you, listen, go read this language. Go read this language and what Brother Leroy is going to talk about with the pension. Go look at this language. Brother Leroy was really clear last night. He slowed the pace down. He asked you to get a piece of paper and a pencil. Write this stuff down. He'll tell you where to go look at this. You got to read this. It's imperative right now. It's truly imperative for our well-being. And, of course, you know, later on, I think we're going to try to talk about the temporaries and a couple other things, you know, but this health care, this is, I've said this all along, in my opinion, you know, we've known that General Motors has always wanted to get pensions and the health care. And in my opinion, this contract, I think, does that. Those two main issues are in this tentative agreement. And I mean, that's all I got to say. I don't want to keep beating this, you know, this horse, this dead horse with this big whip I've got, but it's pretty damning information, folks.
Yeah, it's, this stuff is serious, folks. I mean, brothers and sisters, this information we're telling you is in your contract that you're voting on. We're not making any of this up. We're reading it right from the text, and we've gone out and trying to research it and parse the words of this contract. When you read these things, pretty much every word is arguable. So you really kind of have to parse every word to see exactly what it means. And we do our best to do that. I mean, some of us have been around contract language a long, long time. I hired in 69, so that you know a little about my background. I'm the sole person that initiated legal action that attempted to stop or alter the injustices done about us or to us in the retirement VEBA. I took that case on and appealed it to the highest level that my attorney was allowed us to go to. And we did a good job. We had good counsel. We had a law firm from Philadelphia and one here from Detroit that worked in concert, both with Supreme Court experience and successes. So we had good counsel for that. And with that said, you kind of know who I am right now. I had another case that went up and dealt with pension to the Supreme Court. So having said that, let me delve into this pension. It seems to be really concerning a lot of people. And Chad from Baltimore asked me to go over it again. And Chad, we're gonna do this for you and the rest of the people listening. And please get a pencil and a little piece of paper. It doesn't take a lot. I'm just going to give you a few pages that you can reference when you get the opportunity to get on a computer. Okay, you have to go to UAW.org. And then go over there to negotiating, auto negotiating, and there'll be a drop down over there. Now I've got all these downloaded into my computer, so I don't have to do that. But there'll be a drop down, and then the GM and FCA contracts are there. Click on the GM part. The highlights for the hourly and salary be the top two, and then the drop down, and then it starts with the master agreement on the left. And then the pension agreement, and then I believe health care field trades are in there as well. I can't recall the other two supplements right off the top of my head, but these are the ones that most affect us right now. But that's where you go to find what I'm about to tell you, okay? That's UAW.org over there to auto negotiating, and then the GM drop-down. All right. So on digital page 4, of the pension plan, digital page 4. I'm going to read this out to you. General Motors LLC, by payment of contributions under the Internal Revenue Code, including contributions required by the Pension Protection Act 2006, effective for plan years on or after October 1, 2008, shall be relieved of any further liability under the plan. That means corporations have been relieved from any liability under the plan. Okay? They don't have to put any more money in it. That's what it says right now. Okay, so keeping that in mind, now we're going to move up. I got another little tab up, so I don't have to go down to it. This is digital page 93. I've been talking all day, so if I clear my throat now and then, I apologize.
I understand.
Digital, yeah, I got Nani. Been a real busy week, let me tell you. Digital page 93. This is article 7. And this is 4B, and that, and then we're going to go to I. It seems to be most effective. This talks about the B itself talks about, and let me just go over the law that's now affecting pension plans, because this is part of the. This has nothing to do with our contract. This is part of the other research I had to do, and verify and confirm. The new law has a green zone from 80 to 100% funding, a yellow zone between 60 and 80% funding, and below 60, it's a red zone. And that's what this paragraph B is dealing with. Now, in subparagraph I, okay, still on page, digital page 93 of this agreement, pension agreement, talking about lump sums, and I'll just summarize this. It talks about lump sums not being paid out, any single sums, lump sums, any COLA catch-up that's paid out of the pension, any buyouts that are being offered would not be paid out. And this is if it goes below 60%. Now, I'm not talking about the one that's being offered. Okay. This is if the pension plan goes below 60%, all of these sort of things are no longer payable under the law. And with regard to the pension, the plan is obligated to adjust the pension. Now, they can do that in pretty much any way they want to, but in this case, under paragraph II, two I's, I'll read this to you because I read it out last night. Shutdown benefits and other unpredictable contingent event benefits not permitted to be paid. An unpredictable contingent event benefit with respect to unpredictable contingent event occurring during the plan year shall not be paid if the adjusted funding target payment percentage for the plan year is less than 60%, then it goes on if they have certain actual under B, under IIB, this is, talks about a second way to calculate whether it's 60% or not. And then under III of this same series, this deals with pension accruals frozen. In other words, anybody still working in the plants, you would no longer accrue benefits if the pension funding goes below 60%. Okay? Now, you all know where the stock market's at, and you all know that this pension fund is related to what the stock market does. And we're beholden to the stock market. Okay? Because there's no more funds being added to this pension plan. Okay, they say if it goes below 60, all of these things occur right here in black letter print. If it goes below 60, these things occur. They're required by law to do one of them, and they're supposed to adjust the second one, and the accruals is something that they've adjusted according to their obligation. So again, if it goes below 60, no lump sums paid out, no buyouts, such things like that. Benefit, the shutdown of benefits, and no accruals if you work in the plant. And that's sad to report out, but that's in black letter print right here. So then what happens? Well, it's below 60. The company's not going to put any more money in it because they don't have that liability anymore. So we either have to poke for the wiles of the stock market to increase the 60, to go above 60% funding, some interest that might come in to go below, take us above 60% funding, or a bunch of us die off and take it actuarial above 60% funding. So that would be our lot in life once this actually triggers at minus 60 or below 60%. To keep this real, today the stock market closed at 17,867. I believe that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 550 points below our high, all-time high a couple of months ago. Having said that, in 2007, we had a high of 14,200, and the market went to 6,400, about a 55% drop. That's roughly. I haven't done the actual math. And that low came March 6th of 2009. So a 55% drop, and we're funded at 85% now, would take us down into the 40s somewhere. The other thing I know that I can tell you is that in 2013, the beginning, this is the end of 12 when the letter came out, we had about $61 billion in the pension fund. At the end of the year, we had $60 billion, a billion less. The remarkable thing is that the measure for all large funds, such as our pension trust, is the Standard & Poor's 500, and it went up 30% and a couple of tenths. We'll just call it 30% for the sake of rounding off. Now, 30% of $60 billion is $18 billion. So if it went up 30%, it should have went up to somewhere around $78 billion by the end of the year.
Right.
And I said openly on the show last night that it seems to me that somebody got $18 billion. So while they froze the effort, they relieved them from their effort for putting money in, it doesn't seem they relieved their obligation to take money out, or their ability to take money out, rather. So that troubles me. In good times, they take, and then when it goes down, they'll say, oh, no, we don't have an obligation to put any money into that. I think when they froze that, relieve them from that, they should have probably, froze their taking money out, too. And there's some ERISA law that regulates that, and maybe some folks will be taking a look at that pretty soon. But having said that, that's the long and short of it, brothers and sisters. I mean, this, if it goes underfunded, under 60, it's not going to be pretty at all. And that's what the law allows them to do now, because they can do about what they want once it gets below 60. It's called a red zone. And they can do almost anything they want with it. It's in black letter print. It's on digital page 94, and the other page was not on 4. Page 4 of this pension plan. I believe what I've been telling you is accurate. The other thing I talked about last night was ERISA. Let me read this again for you. This is Title 29 USC Code 1001, and this is regarding ERISA. On the paragraph B, it is hereby declared to be the policy of this chapter to protect interstate commerce and the interests of the participants in the employee benefit plans and their beneficiaries. And like I said last night, they go on to say how they would do that. And sanctions, too, if they don't do it right, by the way. So ERISA's real clear that they're there to protect the interest of the participants in employee benefit plans. So, like I said earlier, some people that heard that folks that were non-participants in the plan were voting on the plan, they were aghast today, and as well yesterday too, but louder today it seemed. Having said that, I believe because, and I want to be real clear, everybody continue to vote. Everybody continue to vote. But we believe that certain people that are non-participants in the plan ought not to be voting on the pension portion. Okay? And that's just simply wrong. It's wrong that you're not in it. Brothers and sisters hired after 2007, we believe, you know, that it's wrong that you're not in it. But at the same time, you're not. Other people have done that to you. But I said last night, and I intend to do this, is appeal the election. I have standing as a plan participant. And the only thing I'm prohibited for by UAW Constitution is from voting in a ratification. That doesn't mean I can't challenge it. Okay? Or anybody else that feels the same way as I do. But I will be challenging this election primarily, and from my point of view, from the idea that non-participants are voting on the pension plan, that the ERISA protects the participants in the plan, and they shouldn't be doing that. Quite frankly, it's that simple. They shouldn't be there. And not only that, they're incentivizing people that are non-participants in the plan by an $8,000 signing bonus and a $9 an hour raise. Then I'm out to taking somebody off the street and saying, here's $8,000 and $9 an hour for the next 4 years. Now, I'm not mad at you for getting that, and it's not anything illegal that they do. It's part of this contract. But this contract shouldn't have been part of it. It's a pension plan. Even if they said only the actives could vote on it, that's fine too. But non-participants shouldn't be voting on this pension plan. They're not part of it. It's that simple. I believe that pretty much covers what I said last night. And I guess we expanded on a little bit. This is serious stuff, brothers and sisters. Real serious. And I wish I weren't reading from black letter print and know what I know about pensions with regard to this, but it's not good in any way, shape, or form. The International Union has not brought this forward. It's not part of the highlights that I know of. They haven't brought it forward in the rollout meetings that I know of, and I've got reports from a lot of them. They've kept this silent as best they could. And you have someone like me that dug and dug and dug to find this and then to research it and still following up on it. So if those of you that feel the same as I want to contest this election, challenge it, I will have by noon tomorrow a template for such challenge on the website that we are associated with, Workers, Workplaces, and Unions. And that's about all I got to say about the pension plan right now. I hope that satisfies Chad and everybody else out there with regard to this. There's a couple other issues we want to talk about tonight. I think Scott has something. And unless there's any other questions on this, Donnie, I'll turn it over to Scott.
No, Scott, take it over. Scott?
I hope he didn't fall asleep. He's so tired.
I'm sorry. I'm like you. I'm trying to mute my phone so I kind of get rid of some background noise. I got a couple questions on this with said information that you just went over again. Question one. What is the perimeters set up on this said language. I guess what I'm asking, why by any perimeters, who does this affect on the pension plan? Does this, would this possibly affect active retirees, not just future retirees?
This affects anybody receiving a pension and any future people that may receive a pension. Anybody that hired prior to the effective date of 2007 agreement.
So this does affect everyone that's in the pension currently.
And those that may come in the pension, yes.
And those that, the future pensioners, the future retirees,
this,
you're right.
Let me put it in a different way. This affects plan participants. Those are people who hired prior to 2007. Okay, those are plan participants. Anybody that's still working would be affected in the sense that they would no longer, if it went below 60, their accruals, as they accrue pension benefits, they would stop. For example, if they had 26 years in, they would cease to accrue pension annual pension credit as long as it was below 60. Okay, so you'd be, even though you could have 30 years in or 30 more if you wanted, the 30 plus, and still be stuck at 26 years of pension credit when this occurred. Okay, and as far as it affects, you know, the obviously all retirees, everybody that's in the pension plan.
Okay, so for another example, I'm gonna play the big dummy here. So let's say in a scenario, for example, this is just for an example, folks. Like you already said, so we're cruising along. Hey, I hit a milestone. I hit 25 years. And during my 25th year, if the pension falls below that funding, if I'm hearing you right, I'm not accruing any more time towards my pension until that said funding comes back up above 60% again. Correct?
The pension funding comes back above 60. You are correct in what you just said, as far as I understand, in my opinion.
Right. And I just
very
wanna,
educated
I just wanna make
opinion,
sure that
nonetheless.
We...
Okay. pardon me,
right.
Scott. I added a very educated opinion nonetheless.
There you go. Well, I just want to make sure that if we have, because people are still going to write in on this, and I hope you do, and we'll try to answer it. But for the sake of the conversation right now, I'm trying to make it so you understand exactly what we're talking about and examples of what could happen. Now, my other question to you is, for anybody who goes and goes to Appendix A and looks at this language and the tentative agreement, Brother Leroy, what is so special about this said language? And by asking that, I mean, what's all this language with all the lines underneath it?
Oh, okay. All right, Scott. Well, in the pension plan, there's a lot of language with lines under it. The line under it means that it's new language that's being added. That when they add language to the agreement, there's two ways they do it. They simply say, they put the word new at the top of the page, and that entire page is new, and it doesn't have lines underneath it. Or, as in the case of what we're looking at here, Scott, they'll be having the area that they're being covered, that's being covered, and they will put lines under it. And this is all new language. I can tell you there's a lot of new language in here, and this is the one that strikes me the most with regard to how the new law is being handled. Paragraph I deals with lump sums ending. Paragraph II is how they handle the benefits, and this is a shutdown of benefits. And these are in cases below 60% funding of the pension plan. And paragraph III deals with people still in the plan. You would stop accruing pension credit. Okay, you could, you know, if you got 25 years and the pension fund funding went below 60, if you're a plan participant hired before 2007, the effective date of that agreement, then you were in the plan, and let's say you had 30 years. Well, I mean, some people could have 5 years or 10 years in. Well, from now, 7 to 8 years now, you know, let's say something happened in 3 years from now. They'd have 11-year seniority, okay, and the pension plan went under 60% and stayed there for 5 years. And they could conceivably have they'd have 16 years and only have 11 years pension credit. Okay, so the pension credits will stop, the accruals will stop when the fund goes below, if and when the fund goes below 60%. I hope it doesn't, brothers and sisters, but the language in here is, I mean, pretty draconian. I mean, these people are supposed to be looking out for us. And if it was something that they thought was good for us, they'd be all over telling us about, you know, I mean, there's people out there right now running these flyers around saying, hey, this is going to happen if you vote yes. You know, they're not telling you about this kind of stuff that's buried deep in the agreement that's just absolutely devastating to some people if this went under 60%.
Right. And that's kind of what I wanted to come back and touch base on, is that people understand that this is all new language.
Yes.
And you have to understand, like Brother Leroy said, in light of the law change in the federal court, in light with now what is happening, it is happening.
Well,
this is an opinion. This is here. This is actual language that you can see, and it's all new language. That's my point. This is all new language.
Right. Right. So, this is new law. It wasn't derived from the courts. Okay. This was not derived from the courts. This is new law, and they have to comply with it. You know, and they're doing that. Doing it in a pretty draconian way, as far as I can tell. But if they thought that they could get away with this without anybody seeing it, and I'm just appalled at what I've read here. Absolutely appalled. And, you know, if they have these major changes in the pension, I mean, this language, there's pages and pages of new language in the pension plan that the IUAW has stood mute on, not said a word, trying to sneak it through. And if they have any different opinion on what we're saying, then they should have said it in the rollout meeting.
Yeah. So, I do agree.
Anyhow, some other things to cover. Scott, you want to take on another issue, or do you have any more questions? I guess on this issue.
No, I don't.
No. I just wanted, I guess, for clarification, you know, to really understand, this is really. I can't even put it in words how important this is. This is just detrimental to us and to the have been retired. How this could affect the payout for the pension.
Right.
Coupled with the health care, the pension language, and there's more stuff, you know, like the temporaries. We're going to talk about a little bit tonight about the temporaries also.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also... that is in the main book. If you go to the summary, I believe it's what the first book on the left hand side referred to as the GM Full Language Book 1. And I believe that that is on, it's on page 89 of the copy of the paper, but it's on digital page 115, 115. And you'll see it says attachment B to appendix A, workforce composition, and it's temporary other than skilled employees. Side note, before we kind of touch base on the temporary, have you noticed, Don and Leroy, that a lot of the trades have been voting no, or a majority of the trades have been voting no on this tentative agreement? Why do you think that would be?
I have a real good explanation. It's sort of one word. Aramax. Well,
go right ahead. I've got some, I got some ideas on it, but if you got an idea too, they're probably the same.
Well, Aramax is a company that handles the skilled trades. It's my understanding, let me say that, that handles the skilled trades for Lake Orion. And this is a pilot plan that they're doing down there, apparently. Aramac is a third-party company that supplies skilled trades to service the plant. They do not have skilled trades employees inside the plant any longer. It's my understanding that Aramac does all of that. And the skilled trades folks know that. And they don't want to be working for Aramac. They hired in at General Motors, and they want to stay at General Motors. And they smell something rotten in Denmark with this Aramac over there as a pilot program, and they're not happy with the language that's in the agreement. And they're voting no because of that in a large measure. So I would say, in my opinion, that's what it is. But there's probably other things that you know about to add to that.
And think about that for a minute. There are some other things. I talked to a couple trades people last night. And like I said, I talked to them personally, so the one individual expressed to me the concern that they feel that they've been left out as concerning the FAP, the Special Attrition Program. They feel that they should have been offered that that program as well. That probably got some of the tradespeople to retire, because you know as well as I do, a lot of tradespeople have more than 30 years. excuse me. The other individual I talked to touched a little bit about what you were talking about with Aramark services, bringing in people. We have limited things that we still do in our plant that our skilled trades does do. And funny that, you know, you should talk about that, because Aramark hires their supervisors to tell our skilled trades what to do. We don't have gentlemen or foremen level 6, your frontline foreman. You don't get back to general owner's management over the trades until you get to like level 8 or 9, which is like what we used to refer to as a general supervisor or superintendent. And at that point, then they tell the Aramark employees what's going to happen or what's going to go on. And then this outside supplier foreman then goes back to the GM employees and, you know, lets them know that they had a work order or this needs to be fixed or that needs to be taken care of, whatever. And that truly is upsetting to some of these tradespeople. And when I talked to the individual, he said, look, he says, they're talking about adding more people in the trade. He says, where are they going to put them? He said, you know, you got document 157 slamming them right between the eyes where they want to consolidate trades. And that was his main point, was the consolidation of trades. He said, look, he says, you know, I've had to be reschooled once and relearn a trade. For any of us that are old enough to remember that might have worked in, I know where they were at, where I was at was in a metal fab. When we went to the sub-assembly part of the metal fab, we had a classification called a Weimer. It was welder, electrician, welder, electrical, repair, maintenance. And the Weimers, that classification was done away back in the, I believe it was the 90s. And what happened was he had to retrain. He had to learn a new trade. And he actually went in 100% wholeheartedly, learn a new trade. And now he's being told that that trade is, you know, basically disappeared because all they want is two trades. They want, or two classifications of trades. Excuse me about that. They want electrical and mechanical. And that's all they want. And he's concerned with the classification of the vote, the results, based on previous set agreement of document 157 and the implementation of what that's going to do to these tradespeople. So, yeah, you're right. They think that there's something stinky out there, but they just can't. It's like when a mouse dies in your house. You can smell it all over, but you got to look all over to find that dead mouse. And that's what these guys are doing right now. And they're upset also that they haven't had enough time for them, for Division II workers, what we usually refer to as the field trades, that they haven't had time to look at this language and how it's going to implicate on them personally. So that, I mean, yeah, I think I'd probably vote no too. I guess what I'd say is, you know, we've talked about the voting, you know, you have production and trades, they're voting on someplace separate ballots. I don't know. I really don't know how this is all going to play out. I definitely can think that the trades is actually, when they're coming out and voting, they're actually making a difference. What do you think?
Well, unfortunately, you know, like I said last night, you know, I wrote a resolution that allowed retirees. I mean, I have some vision here, folks. I mean, I demonstrated vision a year ago for the CONCON and wrote a resolution so the retirees could vote on items exclusive to them. Okay, we're talking about what the pension is, okay? And also, you know, I included in that, because the language is so similar for skilled trades, to have a separate ballot so they could vote on their items that are exclusive to skilled trades. And then they would have, you'd have your hourly employees that had a vote that are non-skilled, and then you'd have your skilled that had a vote on the master agreement and the economic issues therein. And then you would have a separate ballot for the skilled trades to vote on just items that they have exclusive to them. Okay? That was turned down. We've seen Toledo in both FCA and now in General Motors. That's Chrysler and now in General Motors. In the Toledo area, having that separate ballot, and we talked about that last night a little bit, Scott, they've actually split it. They give the skilled trades two ballots, but they're not reporting those out. The items on that are exclusive to the skilled trades folks. They're not reporting those out. They're only reporting out what the skilled trades voted on the master agreement portion. So that's unfortunate that also got turned down because the skilled trades then could, you know, if they turned it down, they could, you know, express themselves better and, you know, maybe even buy a little more time to read some of this stuff because it's just voluminous. I mean, it's just, there's just a lot of stuff to read through, and some of it just scares the hell out of you when you read it. But these skilled tradesmen, you know, that would have provided for them to be specific in their issues with regard to the national agreement. That's not part of what this program is. They can only report out what they vote on the master agreement. And like I said, this all started last contract negotiations when the skilled trades vote at one particular local, Chrysler local in Detroit, would have negated the entire contract, voted it down, and upon clarification by the IEB, they said that wasn't on economic issues, and they allowed those votes to show as yes votes. And so that was appealed to the PRV, and they weren't successful with that, to my knowledge. So that's unfortunate. But we tried to rectify this by resolution, and it didn't occur. And I feel sorry for the brothers and sisters that are skilled trades that are not getting their issues, their specific issues that are exclusive to them, heard in a better way. And we tried to rectify that form, but it didn't work because of the current leadership,
right,
by the way. I'm glad you had input from the actual skilled trades people, Scott. You know.
Right. Right. It's all mine. Some of them are feeling like they've been isolated, left out, and it appears to me through some of this language that was, in my opinion, the intent. But, you know, when we get, go back to the temporary thing now, I apologize for taking this off course on that. When you're reading on this PDF file, you're going to see when you go down to another page, it looks like it's completely different printed. I don't know if that was added in after what they had originally planned. I don't know. I can't explain why this language looks completely different from the page before it. At times it's not very clear as far as the clarity of the print. It's kind of hard to read. It almost looks like somebody made a copy of a copy of a copy. But under this attachment B to Appendix A, they are referring to workforce composition, the makeup of the workforce. And they talk about the temporaries other than the skilled employees. And they are a new employee who does not have seniority in any General Motors plant who is hired as a temporary employee shall be employed in accordance with the following. This is on page 115 of the main book, and our PDF page 115 is actually in the bottom. It says page 89. So the company may hire temporary employees to supplement the workforce, overtime, or weekend work in any plant covered by the UAW-GM National Agreement. Now, I got a question for Brother Leroy on just that piece right there. Would that also include the GM, CH, and the sub?
Yes, it does. The GM, CH is a part of this contract, except for wages. Okay, so
right.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so we'll move forward. Employees will be utilized with approval of the national parties any day of the week to replace employees not at work for certain absent codes, specifically unexcused absences, intermittent family medical leave act, referred to as FMLA, leave, absences, or sick leave absence of less than 12 months. The number of temporary employees eligible at each facility will be based on that facility's average of the aforementioned absence calculated as percentage of total absenteeism multiplied by number of full-time employees. The back end of that gets into legalese, but what I'm saying is basically they can bring in a temporary and utilize them whenever they need for basically about whatever reason. Because if you go to C, it also says that they can be utilized with the approval of the national parties as a vacation replacement. And on other occasions such as, but not limited to, product launches, hunting season, and awaiting transfer of laid-off employees from other locations. Case in point would be at our local. We've got some people that are going to probably be coming from Lake Orion as soon as they cut that shift over there. We will receive some of those people at our local. But until those people get to that local, instead of us hiring full-time employees at our local, General Motors utilizes the temporary staff. I call it temporary staff because they're employees, but they're at-will employees. They utilize this instead of hiring people, okay? And that's where we're going to get with this, is that there's an unlimited cap on the amount of temporaries they can hire now. When the people from said plant come to our plant, they will just remove the temporary from that job, and hopefully through a job selection process, bidding, as we call it, somebody will probably try to bid on a job with their seniority rights. They will then use that temporary somewhere else inside the facility. And our Don knows about some of the flex workers. We're only supposed to be working 2 days a week or possibly three, but because parties mutually agreed upon at the local level, and when they do that, they have to still ask permission from down in Detroit. They let the flex workers, some of them work 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
And
that's true. And it was Flex, they signed up for Flex. Weren't they supposed to be the first ones hired? Also, what that gentleman was talking about when he stood up in our aisle and said, I was told if I went from temp to Flex, he would, you know, Flex workers would be the first to be hired. If you remember,
but we don't hire people, though.
The rollout meeting. Remember the gentleman at the end of our aisle? He was quite upset with that.
Yeah, he's literally been on a roller coaster ride around his employment status.
Yeah,
and,
4 years,
you
said.
Yeah, I mean, all of us can relate to that. When you know, you're trying to have a life, you know, and I mean in life, I mean family at home, or just paying your bills. You know, I'm not talking about going out and buying a house and buying a brand new car. These people can't do that. They don't make a meaningful wage. They don't have a living wage. And with that being said, you go down to page 116. That's still under the said language double I, or part two of section E. Temporary employees will be eligible for health care coverage under the 2015 Supplemental Agreement Covering Health Care Program. Now, if you remember, we talked about health care. There was three different classifications. There's the active, there's non-core, and then they had their own little section in that health care language that applied to them. And that was under Article 2, Section 1, Part C. So the program may include certain supplemental plans which only are applicable according to their terms, including the GM Temporary Employees Health Care Plan, Appendix F, and the GM Hourly Retirees Health Care Plan, Appendix G, and the GM Subsystem Manufacturing LLC Health Care Plan, Appendix H. They have isolated those people with their own specific health care in this language. Now, to go back, I apologize. Exhibit C to the National Agreement with modifications is described in the appendix titled GM Temporary Employee Health Care Plan. Temporary employees will be excluded from the UAW GM Life and Disability Benefits Program, the Supplemental Unemployment Benefits Plan, which we also refer to as the subpay. They also will be excluded from the Personal Savings Plan. They will also be excluded from Profit Sharing Plan. They will also be excluded from the Pension Plan. They will also be excluded from the Dependent Care Reimbursement Plan and, say, any other UAW GM Benefit Plan or Program. So I guess, unless I'm missing something here, Brother Leroy, that basically says you're excluded out of all the programs other than health care, correct?
Right, Scott. Let me, if you don't mind, I'll take the ball a little bit here. Under paragraph E, it does. It provides for health care, and it's provided for under Exhibit C, the health care program to the national agreement. But it gets some health care, and that's likely because of the Obamacare rule. But then it precludes them from everything. The disability benefits program, the GM life and disability program, the sub benefits plan, personal savings, you can't get any of that. So you can't even have your own 401k with them. Okay, even if you just want to put in some deferred money, you can't do that. Isn't this sad? Okay, profit sharing plan, pension plan, of course, anybody after 2007, we know. But the pension plan, dependent care reimbursement plan, any other GM benefit plan or program, that's all encompassing with the exception of some health care. Okay? After in paragraph I, will be considered for regular job opportunities pursuant to the provisions of the GM policy, working temporary employees to have regular hire documentation if they have an acceptable work record. I believe that was after 5 years. Someone brought that to my attention. But if they have an acceptable, it doesn't say 5 years in here, so they will just say they're considered for a regular job. But these folks can work up to 5 years with no benefits. They have become a permanent part of the workforce without benefits, all those benefits that we fought for, and you hear me talk about that from time to time. Okay, this is sad. It's very sad that they're a part, of the work for the permanent part of the workforce, and yet they're called temporaries for up to 5 years. And, it's just sad. Then if they get 90 days in, under III, they become eligible for 24 hours of unpaid time off work, which must be scheduled in advance and approved by management. Any remaining balance of the unused time will not carry over into the following year. If you really want to take a vacation for 7 days, you're allowed to take 3 days off. You're allowed three.
Right.
24 hours. That's it. 3 days. You can't even take a week off to go on vacation with your family while you're working here. Unpaid time.
Oh.
And it doesn't roll over, the unused balance doesn't roll over. And it isn't like they have a monetary attachment to this. I mean, do you think this is draconian, folks? I mean, somebody that's got a couple of little kids,